Hello everybody and welcome to episode 28 of Learn With Us. This is Nikos Katsikanis, your host. Tonight we have a special treat for you, a guest called Nick Graf, or Nicholas Graf, and he is based in Vienna. He is an Austrian. How you doing, mate?
Hey, doing good. Thanks for having me.
Is it as warm over there as it is in London?
Absolutely, yeah. 30 degrees Celsius. Not today. Today it was raining in the morning and in the afternoon it was very hot. These are the trickiest days.
Yeah, we're not used to this kind of weather, so we have all our crops are dying and people are getting worried about the water.
Yeah. That we're used to that. So it's another, we actually have something, if you directly translate it from German to English, we have something which we call the dog days in Vienna. And these are basically like a series of like 1 to 2 weeks where it's so hot, like above 35 degrees Celsius, where it's so hot that not even the dogs do anything and nobody's doing anything. You just lay around and wait for it to end and wait for the next rain.
So it's basically like Greece.
Yeah, basically like Greece the whole summer probably.
Yeah.
But it's only usually like, it's only 1 to 2 weeks. And then the next rain is coming and you're good.
Okay. So tonight our subject is GraphQL.
Yeah.
Something that I've never used, so you must think of me as a complete beginner.
Okay.
But my understanding of it is a way to just have one service between the client and a server, and then the client asks for whatever data that comes back, and then GraphQL figures out. That's my basic understanding of it.
Yeah. But I think you got it absolutely right. Basically, you instead of like having multiple endpoints, you just have one, and you have this one endpoint, and you basically have a type definition of what your API can return, and because everything is standardized, you can actually build really nice tooling around it, and you have tools like Graphical, and you get complete auto completion on your API. That's pretty nice. And suddenly you can only fetch what you really need, and you get upfront information of like what it would be if it's a string, if it can be nullable or not. That's pretty neat. And to me, it really depends on the application, but if you have a data-intensive application where you really leverage the API to fetch a lot of data or like use a lot of data, and you don't deal with a lot of data on the client, like or like you don't have a lot of like local state on the client, you can go GraphQL all the way, and that's what I did for most of the applications that I built in the last 2 years.
Right.
It was just like, recently I started to do more because I was working on a different project, but for 2 years I was building one reducer. That was for modal, and the rest was just GraphQL queries, GraphQL mutations, and it's amazing. And if you have such a data intensive application, or like any application where it makes sense, I think to me after React this was the biggest shift in how smooth and easy you can develop applications to compare to the times before.
Right, definitely something I need to pick up then.
Yeah, definitely, highly recommend it.
So what's your academic background and your early professional career like before you got into GraphQL?
Sure. I studied computer science. I actually wanted to become an industrial designer, but didn't finish my application for the for the art university. So I thought, like, okay, computer science for a semester sounds fun. And after writing my first programs, I got totally hooked.
This, like, nice.
I really found it extremely fascinating how you can build things from nothing. Started computer science, worked in agencies and startups as software engineer, and from there on ended up doing freelancing. At one point I co-founded my own startup and worked in it for 4 years, but eventually left the team. And then did a lot of front end with React. First Angular, then React came along, and that really brought me back the pleasure of developing.
Angular was horrible, man.
Well, at the time,
AngularJS.
Yeah, but if you think,
I never enjoyed it. Not even one day, man. Angular.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, if you put it in perspective, when I started out building web applications, I mean, the best thing out there was jQuery,
and
I found it like, hey, this thing is amazing. It solves so many problems, and at the time, it was an amazing tool because it removed all the queries from different browsers. And then Backbone came along, and Backbone was like 800 lines of code, and back then I felt like that's genius. It's amazing how much crappy code that I write on a daily basis I can suddenly remove because we have one simple abstraction that is 800 lines of code and it's understandable. But if you look at Backbone nowadays, you would think like, this is horrible. You should not write serious applications with Backbone. And
I never used Backbone. No. Never use it.
Yeah, and I felt the same with Angular. When I used it, I felt like this is the best we can get. And then React came along, and that's how it goes every time.
And then VanillaJS comes along, and people are going back to that sometimes, you know.
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, and yeah, then GraphQL came, and I felt like how are we, like, in the past I always did this long discussions about like how do we build our REST interface, because what we do is not REST anymore, you know, when you let's say, example, if you fetch all the planets from Star Wars and then you want to have the persons, or like let's pick a different, you fetch the all the Star Wars movies and you want to have like all the characters in it, and you want to list the first three names of these characters. And so basically you can either do multiple HTTP requests to get to that information, because you have like planets and people and there's a connection between them with IDs, or you could do like an HTTP endpoint with like planets with people and or planets with persons, and you fetch everything at once, but then you suddenly build custom endpoints for your user interface, and it's very tied together. I think that's exactly where GraphQL's amazingness and power comes in, because suddenly you build one general purpose API, and you can use it for various clients, and you can iterate quickly and move fast, because you might end up with inefficient queries, but once you see them, you can optimize later, and you can still quickly prototype and fetch all the data you need.
Okay, so I understand that it's simple for the client to use the queries, and then it's only one endpoint that you can use on the back end. But how do you actually, say you have Node Server and you have your data, database, how do you go set that up to work with GraphQL?
It's not necessarily bound to Node, because for once you have a GraphQL schema, and that is a basically a definition language that that was defined with the GraphQL spec. And what you usually do is you basically connect parts of this large tree or this query tree to resolvers. So you could say, okay, if you fetch planets, you can connect it to your database query select star from table planets. And you basically do that in code. You write the resolver and mm-hmm. you say, like, this part of the query or this part of the tree should resolve to that. But then if you have connections, so you can, every subquery or every field can have its own resolver. You don't have to, because with, like, returning a list of planets, it automatically fills up all the fields that are available in planets. But if you want to, for example, say, like, now we have in planets, we can have a, stored a list of IDs, mm-hmm. Then in the GraphQL tree or schema, you could simply say, like, okay, mm-hmm. I don't want to expose this list of IDs, but what I want to expose is people that live on this planet, and you, okay. you make this part of the, this field basically becomes a subquery. That can have its own resolver. And then you, as an input for this resolver, you get the IDs, and then you can actually say, okay, from the table persons, give me all the persons with these IDs.
I see.
And then you suddenly fetch only the data you need, and you get this this really nice way of, like, getting all at once what you need. But this also means, like, you have to be... you have to be careful when you design a GraphQL schema, because it's very easy to simply expose the IDs, but on the other hand, they don't add much value, because then you end up in the same situation as, like, if you have, like, different REST endpoints where you would need to do multiple queries to fetch one thing. But it's way nicer to actually think twice about, like, your API, and people probably can't use IDs. You want to give them real objects, and so yeah, you have to think about how you design your schema.
I see. So does GraphQL have different connections to different databases, like MySQL, you know, all the stuff?
It's you can do whatever you want, because your resolvers, you can connect it to JSON, you can connect it to MySQL, you can connect it to DynamoDB, whatever. The resolver is just this idea or concept of connecting part of your query that someone asks for to a data source. And this can be written in JavaScript, and there's a GraphQL.js implementation, but people also build GraphQL backends with Go or Python or Ruby or you name it. And also, like, by definition, GraphQL, like, it's only this idea of communicating between the client and your backend, this query language. But how you eventually implement it on the backend, these are different libraries, and there are even different approaches. Some builders, depending on the language, sometimes you already have a type system, and then you can simply leverage that one. Others make it in a different style where it looks more dynamic. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's no limitation on, like, what data source or language you want to use in your backend. Also in your frontend, I mean, it's very common, like, what we see is very developed and clients on the web, JavaScript clients, but they're also mobile clients written in for iOS and Android.
I see.
And I mean, this was actually part of the initial motivation for GraphQL as well, that Facebook was maintaining a lot of different versions of their mobile apps,
mm-hmm.
because not everyone is updating their mobile app all the time. And so what you end up with is a lot of different clients that use different parts of the APIs.
Right.
And so deprecating fields or so was really, really hard. And they also had no information at all who, which client is using what, or like if a field is still used. Because if you just say, give me all the, let's say, give me all my friends, then you get like information about that person as a JSON response, but you don't actually know which fields the clients are interested in. And what Facebook does internally is they can track which fields are actually with GraphQL, because you always have to ask explicitly. There's no such thing as like, give me all fields. There's
right,
no,
I see.
You can actually track what clients ask for. And then if you mark something as deprecated, you can figure out like, cool, we have deprecated this and there are zero clients asking for this since 3 weeks. I think it's fair to say, it's safe to say we're gonna actually remove it. But imagine you have a B2B customers and you deprecate the field, and then from 900, 899 actually move over to the new fields, but you figure out, oh, there's one more left. You can actually figure that out based on what they query, and you can really go there and say, hey, you have to fix this before like shutting them down and creating a lot of drama and confusion and bad experience.
Okay. Well, I've never actually met a client in London that's using GraphQL. So is there a lot of momentum? A lot of companies over there in Vienna using it?
Yeah, absolutely. So from the three different clients I'm consulting right now, two of them use GraphQL. They started relatively recently. But they're also like, more in the US, I've seen a couple of companies adopting it more and more.
But I guess REST is still the majority.
Yeah,
the
definitely.
Vast majority, right?
I mean, it's that's a kind of an industry standard that that established over years. But also the thing is like, when you talk about REST, what is REST exactly? Because most of the companies actually don't do REST as it is defined.
Yeah.
So it's like, reminds me a bit about Scrum. Or so it's like, you know, a lot of people do Scrum, but we do this and this differently.
Yeah,
and it's
yeah.
like, yeah, we do REST, but with this changes or additions or special notion of it.
So say you've got a large company and say in the UK that's not using GraphQL, how would they get started with it?
So what I've seen a couple of times is that when companies like usually it's driven from the front end people. If you have this split front end back end, which is usually or very common. It's driven by the front-end people because they enjoy the way you can query data.
Mm-hmm.
And how you would go about it is basically set up one endpoint that wraps your REST, your existing HTTP or REST endpoints, and puts it into a schema. And that's a very quick and convenient way to get started. Because you don't have to rebuild a lot of your infrastructure. Obviously, this creates a little bit of overhead because it's one more round trip. But usually, if this is just an internal round trip in your infrastructure on the back end, this goes very fast, ideally. And usually, the benefits of like developing features faster outweighs this little extra hop. That's also when I talked to someone from GitHub, that's exactly how they did it internally. It was a couple of people adopting GraphQL, just wrapping REST endpoints, and at some point it became a major thing, and then they built resolvers, not just calling REST, internal REST, or calling REST APIs. They just started to build optimized resolvers for specific calls. Yeah.
So it's something that you can add incrementally, not something that's big bang, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. I mean, you don't have to drop your whole REST endpoints, but you can wrap one of them at a time and then start to move over and add things. And I think that's a common pattern from technologies that you see coming out of Facebook. Is I think they have to be incrementally adoptable, because Facebook would have had a hard time to make a big bang move and switch everything over overnight. Projects that are born out of this ecosystem, they're usually incrementally adoptable.
Yes. So I'm thinking about comparing it to REST. So REST would have something like my domain /API/resource/ID. And then you said a verb or something like that. So in GraphQL, what would be different?
I think I briefly lost you.
So in REST,
yeah,
we basically have a your domain /API/ resource. Then you get a verb with some post data or get or put or that. What would it look like in a GraphQL query?
Basically, you have the same thing, but it's just one query structure where you have you open curly braces and then you say resource X, and then you open another curly brace and you tell it or resources X, and open a curly braces and then tell it give me the ID and the title. And then you basically get back an array of these resources X with only the title and the ID in it.
Well, you can use curly braces in the URL.
It's not in the URL. It's usually a post request.
Right, I see.
Which makes it. You can do it through. I think curly braces are valid in the URL, and I'm not sure at this point. But at least, some people do it via GET request, and you could absolutely serialize it if there are some issues. But yeah, usually it's done through POST requests.
Oh, well, sounds really interesting. I definitely need to try and use this at some point. I'm rebuilding my website using Google Cloud, and I'll be using their cloud services. So a lot of that, I'm not sure I'll have to write any RESTful APIs, because things like Firebase, they have already have an API.
Yeah.
But it's not GraphQL. It's basically Firebase's or Google Cloud stuff. But I guess this is GraphQL is more for bespoke.
Yeah.
Web applications, right?
Yeah. Well, the thing is, even the Firebase. So GraphQL also has this idea of subscriptions, real-time updates, but this is younger. So I think we will still see more adoption of that. And one thing is so Firebase, yes, they have their own API, but for example, in comparison, AWS. Recently started to publish a project called AppSync, which allows you to build your own GraphQL endpoint and connect it to different AWS resources. And they already support one way of doing real-time updates through GraphQL subscriptions. And yeah, so while I'm not sure how Google, how they think about GraphQL and what's the official stand and if they want to support it and probably maybe even Firebase. I have no idea about any progress there. But for sure, AWS is betting on it. And yeah, I think that's good news for GraphQL.
So before we continue, I just want to say among users, me, Nick and I are planning some event in London later this year. So remember to keep tabs on the website at QuantumJS, and we'll have we'll be bringing Nick to London once we figure out all the details, and we'll have a GraphQL one day masterclass.
Exactly. So that'll be fun. Looking forward to that one.
Yeah. Have you been to London before?
Yeah, definitely. I spent in total maybe 2 months there in my life. Probably more.
So what's it like? Are you living in central Vienna?
Yeah. Right now, like I lived with my parents for a long time in the north of Vienna, and that was quite tricky to get into the city because it was always like 45 minutes ride with a bicycle or like 35 with a car, which for someone from coming from London probably is nothing. But in Vienna that's a distance where I say like, yeah, maybe that's so far, I'm probably not gonna do it. And yeah, now I live pretty central, and I can do everything by bike. Basically, everything where I need to go, I'm there in 15 minutes max, and it's
no
very
way.
Comfortable.
That's amazing. Yeah. What's the pollution like in Vienna?
The what?
What's the pollution like in Vienna?
What do you mean pollution?
The pollution, the car fumes, the atmosphere, the air quality.
Oh, the very good. On the west side of Vienna, there's a huge forest, and that helps with. But in general, air quality is really good.
And is there a lot of large tech companies in Vienna now?
Not so much. There are some interesting startups, but I mean, compared to London, the tech scene is small, definitely. It is decent, and we got like serious meetups. So if you go, for example, to a React meetup, you get 60, 70, 80 people every time.
Nice.
And I think that's a good size, because you have some innovation and you have some good people there, and you definitely can exchange ideas.
How long have you been running or been going to the React Vienna?
I've actually co-founded it. I think it's gonna be 3 years now, in a month or two. It was quite fun because when we started out, like nobody was using React. The friend of mine, Sebastian, asked me, "Can you speak about React at this meetup that I wanna start?" And I told him, "Yeah, sure, but you know, from my perspective, I think nobody will come." Because nobody will knows React, and he was like, but let's do it anyway, and so it happened that I told him, but if you want to do this, then you need to do this and that and that and that, because I had some experience with doing events, and after all, 25 people came on the first meetup, and
not bad,
quite nice, and they. The more interesting thing to me is they stayed until 11:30.
What?
Or almost all of them. So what happened is like I did a talk for 1 hour, Sebastian did a talk for 1 hour, and then they didn't stop to ask us questions for 1.5 hours.
Sheesh, man. If you go on beyond 9 o'clock, people in London will just growl at you. And there's I want the pizza and the beer. You're stopping us getting the pizza.
Yeah, it was a very interesting experience for us as well, and so we definitely let's do this again. And now it's a React Vienna is a thing. It's happening regularly and with enough sponsors
If your developers are going to 11 o'clock in Vienna, man, I want to come visit there and see what's going on, man. That's hardcore.
You're very welcome to join us.
Maybe I could give a talk on TensorFlow or something like that. TensorFlow.js.
Yeah.
Okay. We're coming near the end of the show, but I just one question I want to ask is: what are the biggest pain points of GraphQL you've seen with clients, if any?
One of the biggest pain points I definitely think is the N+1 problem. So when you like fetch data, and you fetch, let's say you fetch, we have this, made this example of like, you fetch planets and then you fetch the people living on that planet. You basically do two queries to a database, and if like one of them is slow, you have very long response times, and you can optimize for that, but in the end, like that's a tricky problem, and this is hard. Apart from that, obviously, like rethinking and adopting it, and also there's no like imminent benefit for backends if you have like very backend driven teams. They really enjoy backend intercommunication using protobuf or so, but they don't see, like, for them GraphQL is like, it doesn't, they don't easily see the value of GraphQL.
It's more the benefit for the front end developers, I'd imagine.
Exactly, yeah. And if you're coming from the backend, you figure like, how's this better for you? I don't know. I hear this a lot. Like, how is this better for front end people? And they really need to see it or feel it, or I don't know. That's what I actually really enjoy when people do at least a bit of full stack development, because they get the bigger picture of like what's actually important for the customer, and not like driven from one side. If you're like front end, you might ask for like the perfect JSON structure, and it's a mess to implement in the back end. But on the other hand, like in the back end, you might enjoy a really clean REST API, which is completely horrible to work with in the front end. Full stack is if people do a little bit of full stack, I think the outcome usually is way better.
Cool. So, last question. Where do you want to see yourself in 5 years' time?
That's a really hard one. I don't know. Hard to tell. I'm a little bit exploring at the moment. I'm doing a lot of like teaching and giving workshops and so on, and I really enjoy that. So maybe having spending most of my time teaching developers. That could be one thing.
Right, cool. Well, we're certainly we're very fortunate to have you in London at some point. That day's workshop sounds really good, and definitely to do that at some point. Okay, well, thanks very much, Nick, for your time. I really enjoyed talking to you and learning about GraphQL. I've certainly learned a lot myself, and we'll put in some things in the show notes for you guys. And yeah.
Cool. Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Okay, everyone, thanks very much for listening. And as usual, please go on to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review. Every vote counts. And we'll see you next episode. Thanks, everybody. Have a great morning, afternoon, evening, wherever you are. See ya.
Bye-bye.